The Back Page, brought to you by Mirrorsport and backed by Ladbrokes.
Okay, so welcome to episode 4 of The Back Page. I'm Shane Stapleton. With me this week, I have digital sports editor in the Mirror, Rob Hines. How are you, Rob?
All right, all good.
Mick Scully, chief sports writer.
Hello, Shane.
How are you? And Shane Mahon from Ladbrokes. How are you, Shane?
This is your debut. Yes, it's going to be quite the obstacle. Two Shanes on the podcast for the first time, so we're going to have to watch that.
We will. They'll know by my ignorance that it's me. You seem like a polite guy. We'll just start off with Celtic. Last week, Rob, I basically said Celtic are a little bit irrelevant. No one cares about them anymore. I'm guessing you have a massive Celtic tattoo somewhere now or something, because you seem to be furious with it.
I wouldn't go that far, but what I would say is I don't think any team that has the third highest average attendance in Britain can be called irrelevant.
Yeah, but, you know, really and truly, like, we aren't paying attention to them anymore. People that are local, they love them, but they're basically a championship team at best.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's to do with the money. I think years ago when O'Neill was there, I don't think the financial gulf was as big as it is now.
Mm.
And I think when you come up against PSG, that can basically spend as much as they want on players. Like, I mean, you have to expect to be losing by those sort of scorelines.
How many years ago did Celtic beat Barcelona 1-0?
It was, might be wrong, 6 years ago maybe.
They were relevant back then.
When Lennon was there.
Now they're waltzing to the SPL title every year. It's pointless.
It's not pointless.
Okay, I'm obviously
trying to. Europa League.
I'm trying to draw you out, but they're definitely not as relevant as they used to be.
The problem is that, you know, they're not putting any finances into it at all. This has been the case going back to O'Neill, getting to the UEFA Cup final,
and you look at the
kicked on, and they're playing in a league where they're just it's just a procession every year. It's a joke.
And like basically, they're developing these players to sell on, like Van Dijk, Wanyama, Foster. Like, and basically, if the Premier League team comes in, you'd imagine Dembele will probably be the next one to leave fairly soon, if not in January, more than likely next summer. So I mean, like, that's what you're up against. But I mean, they don't have the financial resources that
to
the
be
English
relevant.
Clubs have.
Yeah. If you think they got into the Premier League on a yearly basis, what would be their average finishing position?
Well, I think a lot depends then if they've the money that English clubs have with the backing. I mean, at the minute, well, I don't know where they'd be at the minute, but I mean, after a season or two, with the money,
I think they would become
clubs.
Relevant if they went to the Premier League, because they get huge attendance. Like, they continue to have huge attendances, and they'd have that same level of money from the TV revenue.
Like, I mean, I think if you look at the start of the Champions League campaign, they were the best place they were going to finish in that group was going to be third. They were never going to finish ahead of Bayern Munich or PSG, unless there's an absolute disaster in Glasgow next Tuesday. They're going to finish third. So I mean, that's as good as they were going to do. I know they've been hammered, but like, I mean, so what? They drop into the Europa League now, and with the luck of a draw, they might get some way found, hopefully.
Playing Motherwell next, isn't it, I think?
Yes, the third time in a week.
2-11 to beat Motherwell, by the way, just in terms of betting. 6-1 the draw, and 16-1 a bit of Motherwell win.
We all wait with bated breath for that result.
They were very lucky not to lose last night. Very lucky not to lose last night. Mm. I just seen the last half an hour and you were very lucky.
Lads, I think there's only one story of the week for me. Andreas Villas-Boas, 40 years of age, manager of Shanghai SPG, no longer, because he's going to compete in the Dakar Rally. I think that's one of the great positive human interest stories, because, you know, I'm sure all you lads, I look at you and I see that you've kind of been ground down by work and day after day after day, and this guy is going out chasing his dream.
Well, life begins at 40. I think he's just turned 40 recently, and like he's had such a colourful career already. You know, he's been in charge of Tottenham and Chelsea, and you know, there was also talk that he might go to Everton this week, you know, before Big Sam got the big job. So yeah, it's great, fair play to him. Completely new change. I think
how long does that last then, that rally?
2 weeks.
And then that's it, he's
back in management.
He probably looks at the Chinese league and think, okay, I'm walking away from a job, but if a Donegal All-Ireland winning manager can get a job here as assistant coach, I think I might be alright.
But I
think that's a great story. Wayne Rooney back with a hat-trick, and possibly, is it his finest goal in the Premier League? Probably not as good as that City or Newcastle one.
The overhead against City for me, I think.
When he shinned it in.
Especially in that sort of game as well.
Like. Yeah, but you think of the context of the game and what it meant. And he actually showed dexterity, which is kind of a mission impossible for Wayne, but brilliant goal. I mean, it was a brilliant goal last night. He really took a well. But it's funny how luck can change. I mean, he took the penalty, the first goal, and Joe Hart made a good save. Mm. And luckily, it rebounded nicely. I mean, had he missed that, what would have happened?
Butterfly effect. Is that what we're about to talk about?
Sliding doors. Yeah.
Would he have had the confidence to take that strike on if he hadn't scored another goal beforehand? You know, so yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was glorious.
He was definitely back to his best last night. Anyway,
Big Sam's back. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that there was a great piece by, I think it was Rory Smith online, talking about how, you know, Big Sam goes on to, you know, what's that TV show that Keys and, you know, Richard Keys and Andy Gray present out somewhere in the Middle East. Yeah, and he's there on about how, you know, give English managers a chance and all this. And Rory Smith did a piece how it's the same older stock English managers getting jobs time after time after time. Yeah. You know, the likes of Pulis, Pardew, and Sam, they're just going from club to club to club, treading water all the time. It's actually stopping younger managers coming through, guys like the likes of Eddie Howe. So I mean, is anyone happy to see Big Sam back? Everton fans surely
are. I think it says a lot about their ambition. I mean, at the start of the year they spent a lot of money and people are sort of tipping them for a push for a Champions League place even maybe, and now I think it's looking like survival. Really, Big Sam is a survival man, and I think bringing in Big Sam just stinks of let's just stay up.
Yeah, priorities have changed. They're big time. I think I saw a stat there last week where I think there's 9 English managers in the Premier League and 7 of them were occupying the 7 bottom places, which tells you something, isn't it?
I think Calvert-Lewin up front gave him a bit of extra pace there during the week against in the 4-0 win over West Ham. So the fact that, you know, Rooney didn't have to be the focal point up front and he's basically like a shopping trolley up there turning around nice and slowly, so it's probably good that he can play behind that. Pep, given that little G up to Nathan. Oh, the interaction with Nathan Redmond after the game against Southampton
was
2-1
win.
Oh, did you?
I honestly thought, I looked at it going, what are you doing? And then it became obvious that he was G'ing him up big time. And okay, there's a slight bit of arrogance there, but the guy, it just shows the passion that the guy has for the game. And he sees a player who he sees as a natural talent and can't believe he's wasting it in this manner. And I love it. I think it's brilliant.
Oh, just do one, Pep. So sick of you.
He can't do anything wrong at the moment now. Come on.
No, he can't. Like, his team are unbelievable.
Yeah. 40 points.
Yeah.
Joint highest of all time since the league has gone to 3 points. It's pretty amazing at this stage of the season.
12 league wins in a row. Sterling top scorer with 13. And his goals have won City 14 points this season. That's pretty incredible.
Some revelation,
There was some tweet there, right, that his goals this season, he had an 82nd minute equaliser against Everton, he had a 96 minute winner against Bournemouth, 88 minute winner against Feyenoord, 84 minute winner against Huddersfield, and a 96th minute winner against Southampton.
Four games he's won in the last 5 or 6 minutes, and including the last 3 games in the league.
Mm. You know. Just to get an old price call there, Shane, City against West Ham at the week Sunday at 4 o'clock.
Yes, so just as well, this will be a double odds match, so if you're getting involved on the first goal score markets, if your player nets inside the first 15 minutes, will pay out double the odds. In terms of match betting, City long odds on here, not surprisingly, 10-1 on. The draw is available at 9-1 and it is 28-1 about a West Ham win. 28
what
to
a
1.
Price. A Premier League match, 28 to 1.
They're
like
so
something
bad,
you usually get
it?
When like a Premier League team is playing like a non league team in an FA Cup match.
I think Blackburn beat United at Old Trafford a good few years back when United were on an unbelievable run and Blackburn couldn't buy a point anywhere. And I think it was a similar enough betting in terms of match betting.
I remember actually, nothing to do with Premier League now, but I remember a couple of years ago, Drogheda played Dundalk in Oriel Park and Drogheda were 10 to 1 to win, and they did win, and there was a good few Drogheda fans that had a couple of quid on them.
So yourself.
I actually didn't score. I actually didn't make, no, sadly.
So United hit 4 goals against Watford 4-2 away. It's the 6th time United have hit 4 goals this season, and yet Jose is considered a boring old manager that'll pick lads as tall as possible. Have you been do you see them somehow clawing back on City this year? It's very hard, isn't it?
No, they're still not convincing, you know. What was impressive, I suppose, was they got motoring in the first half and Rashford and Zlatan are on the bench, you know. That was pretty impressive. They do have good firepower up front, but, you know, I think Lukaku hasn't been as clinical as he should be. And I think until they do, we won't see them attempting to claw that in.
He's no new boot deal, that's what it was, wasn't it? Did Mourinho call him out for not having a sponsorship in relation to his boots? So there you go.
I think even the other night, like when they conceded the two goals, you're just saying, here comes the self-destruct button, Watford are going to get another one, this is going to finish in a draw. But like, obviously Lingard scored an absolute screamer of a goal.
It's pretty interesting that it's Ashley Young who's kind of leading the charge at the moment.
Another
revelation.
The two great goals,
I presume everyone was very, very happy that time that Ashley Young, they were playing a match at Old Trafford and a bird shot in his mouth. If it was going to happen to any player, there's just something about him that rubs me up the wrong way. Even back in the day when Villa were playing Blackburn in a semi-final of the League Cup, and it ended up 7-4 on aggregate, and he scored the very last goal, and he kind of cut his arms across each other as if to say, that's that, finished. And
it's pretty unique that somebody would rub you up the wrong way too.
So it seems. But United, they're playing Arsenal at the Emirates this weekend.
It'll be a great game now.
So 5-0 against Huddersfield. Ozil on fire.
That didn't tell the story at all. Like, I think they only got the second goal after the 78th minute, and before that Huddersfield had a number of chances to get back into it. It looked like it was going to be in one of those Arsenal performances where they dominated and they pressed the self-destruct button, and then they scored 3 in 4 minutes. So, you know, they're looking good at the moment, but they come up against a side like United, and it'll be an acid test. And you see someone like Ozil running the show last night, and I thought it was interesting that it was only the first time since he's joined the club he's been involved in 3 goals in a game. You know,
that's bad,
because
actually,
you think he kind of runs the show a lot, certainly back when he came into the club. But he tends to go missing in big games. So if he steps up, maybe
he was very impressive last night. Really impressive. I think Lacazette will be a huge loss for Arsenal this weekend.
Came off at half time. What was the injury again?
Groin.
Yeah, but like, Arsenal are, you know, a constant running joke to everyone else. You know, they're after solidifying fourth position there, and they're 4 points
Fan TV each week.
4 point lead ahead of Spurs, who, like, their manager is after bringing out a book recently, and it's meant to be an emotion fest, a bit of a fly on the wall of last season. I think that that's going to end up with them getting ridiculed an awful lot.
Yeah, but just in terms of the match betting this weekend, another double odds match as well. Arsenal against United. Previously, I suppose, it's kind of a forgotten about fixture, really. I mean, a lot of young people growing up, this would have been the go-to match, I think, back in the late 90s and early noughties especially. But in terms of the match betting, it's pretty much a coin toss in terms of the traders' point of view here. Arsenal at home 29-20, the draw 23-10 and 9-5, so just under 2-1 for a United win. And that a 5:30 kickoff.
Just looking at United's last two visits here, they've lost 2-0 and 3-0. I think this weekend, I think it'll be a bit tighter, and it could be maybe 1-0 either way, or maybe a 0-0 draw.
Well, that 3-0 win for Arsenal, wasn't it 2 seasons back?
Yeah,
that game was done in about 20-25 minutes. That game
Arsenal haven't lost a league game at home since the end of January. Does that add on to you for me? Or add anything to it for you, Mick?
Yeah, I mean, it shows that they're building a little bit of a fortress there, and confidence is obviously high at home. Definitely.
Liverpool, 3-0 win over Stoke. Salah, top scorer in the Premier League with 12 goals. It's incredible. I don't think he's actually the most composed finisher in the world. Sometimes you see him finish and you're like, that's Milan Baras-esque or Gibril Cissé-esque, but he just keeps banging
him in. Was it the fourth goal last night? It was an absolute peach.
Yeah, on the volley.
Absolute belter.
I just think he's such a natural footballer. He's beautiful to watch.
Is he on form, or is he actually a brilliant finisher?
Well, it's interesting that he went to Chelsea and it didn't happen for him at all, you know. Chelsea do play in a kind of more practical way, I guess, and at Liverpool he's given full reach for his powers of attacking wise. He's obviously kind of regarded as a winger, but we see him up top most of the time. I mean, the finishing last night was so confident, you know. He's really banging form.
But like, he's yet another player that's come through Chelsea, you know, the way they stockpile talent and they go on and do so well elsewhere, like De Bruyne, Lukaku.
They do tend to loan out a lot of really good players, like, from an early stage, which, you know, Kevin De Bruyne is an ultimate example. He couldn't get a game, and look at him now, he's probably nailed on for player of the season, even in November.
Liverpool-Brighton, how's that looking for you?
Yep, so Liverpool away to Brighton this weekend. Brighton 11-2, the draw 16-5, 1-2 about a Liverpool win here.
Brighton's defence has been very good. Like, they were very unlucky against United last week with that Ashley Young goal. I kind of fancied them to possibly hold out.
Anything else that stands out with Shane there
in
for
terms
the punters?
Of football this weekend, well, we have the Champions League, of course, just very briefly priced up for next week on the Tuesday. United are at home to CSKA, 2-5 about the Red Devils, 7-2 the draw, 15-2 about Moscow, another double odds match there as well. And then Liverpool are at home to another Moscow side, Spartak, this time around, 1-4 about Liverpool win, 5-1 the draw, 12-1 bit of Spartak win, and that again another double odds match that's looking ahead to next week.
It's interesting odds 12-1 because you really don't know what Liverpool's going to turn up. I mean, they have picked up 13 of the last 15 points in the Premier League, but as we saw in Seville, you just don't know.
And obviously the interesting thing is Liverpool could end up dropping into Europa League if Moscow win and results elsewhere don't go their way. But I think Moscow have a poor enough away record in Europe, don't they?
Yeah.
So I'd say Liverpool, even a draw, will get them through, you know.
Isn't it amazing that Liverpool are 14 games in and 14 points off the top spot in the lead? That's like they're probably 6 points off second place. It's just Man City are absolutely
out of run away with it, and they could win by more than 10 really when you think about it, by the end of the year, you know.
Yeah. Horse racing, lads. Rob,
yeah, well, some great races to look forward to. I suppose we'll start with tomorrow in Newbury. We have the meeting of Thistlecrack, and you know what I mean, Harry. Thistlecrack is obviously returning from injury, so I'd be quite cautious about backing him. I think Thistlecrack's favourite.
Yes, so the betting, there's only six of them left in at the declaration stage. Thistlecrack even money, you know what I mean, Harry. 7-4, Colin's Sister 9-1, 10-1, Hallstone. Tack and Desai could be interesting, 20-1, a previous Challenge Festival winner, and Beer Goggles 40-1. That's the Ladbrokes long distance hurdle.
I'd be looking here at, you know what I mean, Harry. I think he was very good last year. I think his only defeat came at the festival, bounced back down at Punchestown. I think just with Thistlecrack coming back, you know, I always be wary of horses coming back from injury to sort of stay clear. I think he's, what's the price you say he is there?
You know what I mean, Harry, 7-4.
I think that's worth taking a punt on,
But don't forget, folks, as well, if you're playing in ROI shops over the weekends, the action at Newbury, our 5-1 offer is in effect. So if you back a winner 5-1, it'll be interesting as well in relation to the Ladbrokes Trophy. At the moment, it's 5-1 the field. So if you've managed to find the winner, you'll be entitled to a free bet matching your stake if you back those 5-1 winners.
I think this Ladbrokes Trophy, I think when you look at the Roll of Honour over the years, you have Denman's, Bob's Wort, Many Clouds, I think it's not as strong as Renewal this year. I think it's very hard to pick the winner. Ireland are well represented. I think Willie Mullins is 3 in it.
Yeah, we have a desperate record in the race
though. Yeah, and no, is 1-2. I think it would be very, I think maybe Conagree is probably the best horse in the race, and maybe
12-1.
I'd be looking at either of those two.
Betting at the moment, Total Recall 5-1, Single Farm Payment been tipped up by a good few pundits lately, 7-1, along with American for Harry Fry, also 7-1, 8-1 Whisper, Genie in a Bottle 11s, 12-1 Coney Green, 14s Baron. Don't forget, we will be paying an extra place, 5 places on the big race, formerly known as the Hennessy for so many years, now under Ladbrokes sponsorship for the first time, 3 miles and 2. It will be an unbelievable slog at Newbury this weekend.
Absolutely. We move on then to Fairy House on Sunday.
Yeah.
Cracking card. Absolutely brilliant races to look forward to.
You've got the Hans Grace and the Drinmore Novice Chase as well, which sees Death Duty back in action. Of course, we do have at Fairy House on Sunday, our 5-1 offer continues. So if you back those winners at 5-1 or bigger, you will be entitled to more free bets. And just actually looking for the betting for, first of all, the Hatton's Grace. Nichols Canyon is at 5-4, Apples Jade 6-4, Super Sunday 13-2, Chilos Emery 11-1, along with Augusta Kate, it's 25's bar. Incidentally, in terms of anti-post betting here, 16-1 about Apples Jade for the champion in March. Possibly looking towards the Mayor's Hurdle, but 16's for the champion. If Gordon Elliott thinks she's up to that standard,
yeah, I'd be siding with Apples Jade here. Won the race last year. Like, Nichols Canyon's a classy animal, but I think Apples Jade could have the better of him here.
It's interesting that he's gone down this route. She was, I think, around 6 or 7-1 for the Fighting Fifth.
Yeah, and I
this
think
weekend as well.
Last year, the Fighting Fifth must have been a week or two earlier because Apples Jade ran in both of them last year and was just better.
She was just beat on the line,
and then
by
obviously
Irving,
won,
wasn't it? Yeah,
yeah, and then obviously won this one.
Yeah, but in terms of the Fighting Fifth this weekend, it looks a one horse race. Bouverdere 5-1 on, 9-2 Irving, 16's bar, only 5 line up. A desperately bad Renewal for, in previous years, has been a real pointer towards a future champion hurdle winner. Possibly not on this occasion. I mean, Fahine, of course, is so short in the betting now after its unbelievable reappearance at Punchestown a couple of weeks back. Boover there, by the way, 7-2 for the champion in March. Andy Paul's betting.
I think, if you were looking towards Cheltenham now, you'd have to be siding with Faheen.
Yeah, absolutely. After that demolition job, beating the likes of Jetski and some decent handicappers in behind, you know, you're just betting on him getting to the fixture in one piece.
Like, absolutely, absolutely.
The November series is over in the rugby, but so it's back to club action this weekend. I mean, it's taking centre stage again. It always rolls on. Johan van Gran with his debut in charge of Munster. But this is kind of with the backdrop of Peter O'Mahony possibly eyeing up a move to France, and maybe CJ Standard too, the famous Irish player. Who is this about him trying to squeeze extra buck out of Ireland now, and is he truly massively into playing for Ireland, or is he just another mercenary really?
Yeah, it was a motive kind of a situation when you pick up the paper and see that story during the week. I think a lot of people would go, hang on a minute, does this guy not owe Irish rugby? I suppose the flip side is you could say he's paid it back in a lot of ways already. He's been at Munster a long time already. But I'd be hugely disappointed if he up sticks at this stage, CJ. He's made a test career. To be honest, I can't see it happening, and I really can't see it happening with Peter as well, because we have to take into account the 2019 World Cup is just around the corner, and we've seen what happened with Simon Zeebo out of the picture now.
But Zeebo would have known that, and Manning would have known that too.
Simon has a lot of links in France. He's got a lot of family. He's always said he's wanted to play there. You know, like, O'Mahony is really the Munster heartbeat. He's the skipper. We see it every year where players, I'm not saying he is not considering it, but I just think with the World Cup in mind, and especially the way the World Cup ended for him last time out in injury and disappointment, I think we see this every year where players talk about going to England and France, and they would get paid a lot more money, and it is a short career and they do have to make the most of it. But I do think the way Peter thinks, especially Munster and Ireland are so dear to his heart, I'd be very surprised if it happened. I can't see either of them going, but time will tell, I suppose. But there were club matches last week as well, but I suppose it's interesting this week because the Champions Cup is coming up, two back-to-back fixtures before Christmas, so it'll be interesting to see how many frontline players are allowed to play after the November internationals. So we could see a lot of mix and matching in team selections in the provinces, so that could make things a little bit interesting in terms of the betting. For Munster, Johan van Gran's come in for his first game, and obviously I think we usually see a bounce when that happens. They're playing the Ospreys, who have been in disarray. There's only one result there. You can see Munster are going to win. I think the odds are pretty
just looking off tissue prices at the moment for the match of the weekend, I would imagine Munster will be around 1-14, the Ospreys 8-1, and possibly 40s for the draw, so long odds on a bit of Munster win this weekend.
Where do you draw the line between someone like CJ Stander, who is a project player, someone coming in and wearing the Irish shirt even though he has no tenable link to the country? Where do you draw the line between it's fair for him to look for full value of what he's worth in terms of wages, and if that's abroad, then fair enough, versus do we want to have players coming in wearing the Irish shirt and then heading off as soon as it's convenient?
No, I'm not saying it's fair. I don't think he will go.
But does this show that the project player thing is just subject to the whim of a player? We put all this time and effort and money into him, and then gone.
But I suppose, I mean, as Joe Schmidt says, as he told us there last month, you know, on average, a pro's career, 6 to 7 years, from their point of view, they have to maximise it. I just don't think in this case, especially, he's going to go. He's invested so much in Munster and in Ireland. There's been so much focus on him in particular, so much criticism around it. He's got a lot of support from within Munster and Ireland, and I just don't think it would be very clever on his part to go.
Okay, so we'll move on to GAA. So there's a couple of big games this weekend. But just first of all, I thought it was very interesting that Austin Gleeson, he was Hurler of the Year in 2016, and this year Joe Canning won it. But Gleeson was talking about how he didn't handle the pressure of being the Hurler of the Year well. He had a bit of a small knee injury, which meant he wasn't quite as fit, but he felt that he did put a lot of pressure on himself this year. And I was looking into the stats afterwards, and since 1995, when Brian Lohan won Hurler of the Year. Only half of the players have won an All-Star the next season. And in Gaelic football, Bernard Brogan is the last Footballer of the Year to get an All-Star the following
season.
That's
interesting, yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
So I couldn't believe the football one. That's incredible. Yeah.
Is it that it's weighing heavily on a player that they've got this accolade, and then they're putting pressure on themselves the next season? Sometimes it's down to what happens with the team themselves and not just the player.
And also, you have to take into account they're marked men as well. Mm. You know.
But also,
I think in Austin's case,
marked,
But and sorry, in Austin's case in particular as well, he's only 22. Mm-hmm. He also won the Young Hurler of the Year. So you know that's the kind of age. That's the level he was at, where he's winning the Young Hurler. So you go, okay, there's more room for him to improve and to grow. And all of a sudden, he's been thrust into the main spotlight as Ireland's best player. It's tough.
Yeah,
and
I suppose the age probably was an issue as well. Cause I think he was saying a lot of young people in his hometown and that sort of thing were coming up to him and saying things. So that probably didn't help things either. Maybe if he was a bit older, he mightn't be saying what he was saying.
There's probably no escaping the pats on the back. And every time you talk to an All-Ireland winner who lose the title the next season, they always talk about these missing 1% here and there that now that I look back and we've lost, you can kind of identify a bit better. So maybe it's that for him as well. Maybe it's the knee injury. Maybe it's just a combination of everything.
And also, you know, you look back on the Munster final and he just never got going. And
he'd had it like a 13-week break. The team had an 11-week break, and I think he'd had 12 or possibly 13-week break going into that game against Cork that they lost. So it's very hard to just kind of be sitting on the shelf for that long and then against the Cork team that had played a quarter final. So the betting this weekend, we have a couple of big games in the club GA.
Yeah, we do indeed. Looking to your own club Coola in action this weekend against Claremacallaghy. Coola 1-6, Claremacallaghy 9-2, the draw, big price of 12-1 on the match.
Are you even allowed to speak about this week? Is there not a media ban?
Yeah, well, like I'd done a couple of previous media outings and I was pulled this week.
Give Paul, us something, surely.
Paul Shute was thrown in instead. I'll give you nothing. I've gotten enough trouble.
That's not what you were saying beforehand.
Yeah, will you stop for that? The big one, Ballyragget against Glenealy in the Leinster Intermediate Hurling Championship final. Fifi could be rolled out again.
1-8 about Ballyragget. Glenealy 5-1, 14-1 about the draw. That 2 o'clock throw in.
I'd say most neutrals want Ballyragget to win, do we?
We'll all,
what happens after.
We're all heading down.
Yeah.
And then the Galway Senior Hurling Championship Final, Gort, Aidan Hart's Gort against Liam Mellows.
Yep, this is on the third this weekend. Gort 1-2, the draw 8-1, and Liam Mellows 2-1 against Titan up in the Benny there.
Should we not talk a little bit about Coola now?
Well, go for it. I want to hear your thoughts on hurling. You're a good hurling man.
No, I'm not.
I want to hear yours. 6 there, by the way. 4-5 minus 6, Coola. Claremacallaghy plus 6, 11-10.
Is the pitch going to be leveler here a little bit?
How does that work?
Well, you know, this time of the year, it's a slow pitch.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Does that not level
you
things out
a little
bit?
You got nothing on me. Hey, all I know is it's going to be a war. That's what it always is in these games. Lads, your bets of the week.
My first of two bets this weekend, and the big one this weekend, the Ladbrokes Trophy and the Racing Front. Coney Gree, he's a, you know, previous Gold Cup winner. He's 12-1. Don't forget, we're paying 5 places each way in this on this big race this weekend. Plus, if we have a, you know, an open enough looking market just before the off, if it goes off, you know, the favourite goes off 5-1. I mean, you're guaranteed a free bet if you back the winner. But in terms of Coney Gree, he's the most lightly raced 10-year-old I think I've ever known. He's, I think, only run 4 times since he won the Gold Cup. You can pretty much put a line through his last race when I think the Bradstocks came out and said that they forgot to put his sunglasses on, so they just pulled him up pretty early. You know, he's a very, very fragile horse, but I'd like to see something like what Smad Place did and what Denman did in previous years go out, make the pace and turn it into a proper, proper gallop. And I think if he does, he'll be hard to catch. So 12-1. And also, just very briefly, a double this weekend on the two big races at Ferry House. The Drinmore, I think that Debt Duty will be very hard to beat. He'll probably go off around about 1-2, I would imagine. And Apples Jade at 6-4. So 6-4 about Apples Jade. Death Duty around about 4-7, 1-2, and then Coney Gree at 12s in the trophy.
I fully agree with that double. I think they'll definitely win those two races. I think with the Ladbrokes trophy, I'm going to side with Whisper here for Nicky Henderson. I think they've about won in the top two weights. I think it's a very good horse. Finished, I think, second to Might Bite a couple of times last year. I think it's a very good horse and might have enough here, but I think Coney Gree has also a great chance.
I just love Spartak at 12-1 against his Liverpool defence. You know, it probably looks won't generous, happen, yeah. But it's an adventurous bet. But you never know. Also, Cormac Cullohy to win heavily.
So are we looking at a reverse of the handicap there? They're currently 11-10 plus 6 on the handicap. So
what are they minus 6?
Minus 6. Oh god, I mean, it could probably 3 or 4-1. I would imagine. I don't have it offhand, would be very, very big. Yeah.
Okay, lads, I think we've it all said, have we? Yeah.
Unless
okay.
You have anything to say?
No, I've nothing to add to that. So,
that makes a change.
So from Rob Hines, the digital sports editor, Mick Scully, chief sports writer, Shane Mahon from Ladbrokes, myself, Shane Stapleton, don't forget to subscribe to and rate the podcast on iTunes. Thanks very much. We'll see you next week.
The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.